Open the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. Welcome, everyone. We'll start today with Senate Bill 252, then go to Senate Bill 290. Senate Bill 567, we want to talk about. There's a chance we might not need legislation. And then before the end of the day, I hope to adopt our amendments to the big enchilada of higher education, Senate Bill 242. So let me start with opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 252. We have a long list of people who have signed up, some of them from out of the area, some from close by. Why don't we start with Bill Porter and Dan Jameson.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hass and committee members. For the record, my name is Dan Jameson. I am the Vice President for the Chalkboard Project. We thank you for the opportunity to share today. We would like to begin with an introduction of the gentleman to my right. This is Bill Porter. Bill is a leader from Education First. He is what you should know about Bill is that he is nationally respected in the area of educational policy and educational reform. He has also worked with several states in the reform efforts, and recently he was the advisor to the governor of Colorado and their highly successful reform efforts. We believe it's very important that we establish a context for the significant topic of teacher effectiveness, which is what Senate Bill 252 is all about. So with that, we would like to invite Bill to offer some comments. Bill.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate the opportunity to meet with you this afternoon. I put together a sort of a small packet of information. I'm not going to speak from directly, but it's really sort of a resource of some information and facts for you to have as sort of a reference as I work through a couple of quick remarks here. So again, thank you for the opportunity. I also want to thank Dan for that awfully generous introduction. Just to put a finer point on it, as part of my job, I spend a lot of time now working with governors and legislators and foundation presidents and education advocates around the country, really thinking about what are the best leverage points, what are some high-impact areas to make a difference in schools to improve student achievement. But at the end of the day, I come home to Oregon, which is where I love. My kids go to school here, and I want nothing more than to see Oregon succeed and for our public schools to be as good as they possibly can be. However, sadly, I think any objective reading of the data, of any achievement results, shows that, in fact, we're not doing very well in Oregon with public education, with the achievement of our kids. I think a generous reading of the data would suggest that our schools are, at best, mediocre. In fact, compared to most other states, our performance lags, and we have fewer, even high-performing kids than most other states do. So that's the generous reading. I think the sadder reading is if you look at the data, you actually see that, and this is very sad, in fact, that of the 50 states, Oregon is one of only five states in the last decade that's actually gone backwards on closing achievement gaps. So while 45 states have actually been successful at narrowing the gap between high-income, low-income kids, ethnic minorities, and white students, Oregon's actually gone in the opposite direction. So that's the situation today. That's the problem we need to confront, the problem that I hope you guys are struggling with. The other reality is that I think we know in public education there are no silver bullets. But the closest thing we do have to a silver bullet is a really good teacher in the classroom. I think we know that all instinctively. If we all think back, we can all think of the teacher who coached us, who mentored us, who helped us meet standards we didn't know we could meet. But what's really interesting is that the research empirically is really beginning to document that in a very solid way. So it's not just sort of a gut instinct, it's actually bearing out in research. And in the slides I passed out, I actually just highlighted two of sort of several studies that make that point. One study is from a couple of years ago by Gordon, Kane, and Stager. And what they found in looking at data is that you could actually close the black-white achievement gap if you had children taught by a highly effective teacher, if they were taught by the top 25% of the teaching pool. So just think about that. We're actually going backwards as a state in terms of the achievement gap. The gap's getting wider. And just think what would be possible if we actually made sure that every kid who was struggling in school had the very best teacher they possibly could be. Gordon Kane and Stager's research suggests that that would actually begin to turn those numbers around. But it's not just their studies. Those results have been replicated in Texas, Massachusetts, Tennessee, and other places. Another slide there in my packet I passed out actually comes from Tennessee. It sort of draws the same conclusion but from a different perspective. It looked at kids that achievement-wise were sort of in the same place and then tracked them as they went through school. And after 3 years with a low effective teacher, those students were had actually learned less, had actually moved down. Conversely, kids that had actually been assigned to a highly effective teacher moved up, learned more. And so at the end of 3 years, kids that had started out in the same place, achievement-wise, in terms of what they had learned, what they had accomplished, were actually in very different places, controlling for everything else based on the quality of the teacher they happened to have. So I guess the point, my reading from all this data, is it's time for us to get a lot more serious about the role that high-quality teaching, effective teachers play, if we're really serious about improving schools in Oregon. We need to get a lot more deliberate, a lot more serious, and we need to start taking the chance out of who happens to get a good teacher and who doesn't. What does it mean to say to get serious? Well, if you look at our current system of how we develop teachers, the human resources system, who enters the profession, what we do with them once they enter the profession, how we support and compensate them, it actually has no bearing on effectiveness or quality. And in fact, it sort of turns a blind eye to all the research I've just shared with you about the role and that research is documenting that the teachers play in improving student achievement. So take recruitment as a starting point. We don't deliberately recruit for who becomes a teacher. Anybody can become a teacher. We don't deliberately say, these are the skills we need to see in teaching. We don't have scholarships. We don't do anything, really, to encourage people to become teachers. And so one end result is that only 23% of new teachers nationally come from the top third of college graduates. We're also not very deliberate in thinking about, as I said, I think the skills we need, especially when you think about kids in high-need schools who really need the very best teachers. The data there suggests that even among the teachers that do come from the top third of their graduating classes, only 14% of those actually end up in low-income or high-poverty schools. And so even our very brightest college graduates aren't actually going to the places where they could probably make the biggest difference. They're going to schools that are actually pretty good. It'd be kind of interesting to think about if we were much more deliberate about trying to encourage the best and the brightest in our society, like, by the way, Singapore, Hong Kong, Korea, countries that consistently perform at the top of international tests do with their teachers, to be very deliberate about getting the best and the brightest into our schools. So that's recruitment. You can think about preparation and training. Right now, the market is driven, preparation programs are driven by what providers want to offer and not by what schools or teachers need. We've all heard stories of the new teachers who show up in the classroom on the first day and realize they actually haven't learned anything about classroom management or what to do that first day in the class. Or even worse, we hear from reading teachers who say they actually never even learned how to teach reading while they were in a preparation program. And research, in fact, has found no correlation between teacher certification and teacher effectiveness. No link between teacher certification and teacher effectiveness. So, in fact, we have certification at licensure, but at the end of the day, it's a pretty low bar for actually certifying anything about whether teachers are actually effective. Then you look at the next stage on the sort of the human resources continuum, hiring and placement. You know, there's little post-rigor hiring, which once a teacher does, leave a preparation program, get licensed, and get hired. 99% of teachers win tenure. I can't think of any other field where 99% of the people hired actually turn out to be a good fit for that job. Research is also showing that there's a spillover effect of just getting one high-quality teacher into a building has an enormous sort of ripple effect about how things happen in that building and sort of the culture in that building. But we don't think about that in placement decisions. And then when it comes to sort of the sad reality of laying off teachers, which obviously is going to be happening here in Oregon as it's happening in other parts of the country, in most places the decisions about who gets laid off are made simply based on who's been around the longest and not actually who's the best teacher, who's the more effective teacher with kids. Then we go to developing and evaluating teachers. So we've hired teachers. They're now here. We know from the research that past performance, as in a lot of places, is the best predictor of future performance. What I mean by that is that research shows that if you are a teacher and the kids you taught last year did pretty well and the kids you taught the year before that did pretty well, it's a pretty safe assumption that the kids you're teaching this year, even though they're different kids, are going to do pretty well. And the converse is also true. If you're a teacher who really struggled to help kids achieve last year and you struggled the year before that, it's a pretty sure bet that actually you're going to be struggling this year too. But that's what the sort of data we use in teacher evaluations right now. And in fact, very few evaluation systems really account in any way for academic growth or student achievement, even though we know it's one of the stronger ways, and one of the ways we really need to be gauging teacher effectiveness. And then if we don't evaluate teachers well, we certainly don't do a very good job of developing and supporting their growth and skills. In fact, I'd argue that professional development of teachers is inferior compared with most other professions. It's too often scattershot, and it's too often disconnected from what teachers actually need, these specific teacher needs to improve his or her craft. And then finally, rewarding. Final point on sort of this continuum that I've been describing. You know, generally today, teachers are all paid from the same salary schedule, regardless of their effectiveness or skills. And in fact, nationally, we spend $8 billion to reward teachers for earning master's degrees. But the research is pretty clear here, on average, that although math may be one exception, generally speaking, whether you have an advanced degree or not really has no bearing on student achievement. So we pay people to get master's degrees, but in fact, the research suggests that that doesn't really have any bearing on whether you're an effective teacher or not. So all this is to say, I think there's a lot of different places to jump in if we're really going to get serious and get much more deliberate and disciplined about valuing the role that teachers play in education reform, in school quality, in student achievement. I think Senate Bill 252, as you're going to hear from Dan and others today, is a really promising start. It focuses on evaluation that would be done better, that would be done more crisply, would really be targeted at identifying where teachers need help and to make sure they get the support, and then to sort of recognize the teachers that do excel at their craft. I'd note that Oregon right now would be in good company if it passed legislation like this. 18 other states, by my count, are actually experimenting with sort of similar approaches to taking a fresh look at evaluation and compensation and professional development in that way. What Oregon has, however, uniquely done, you know, thanks to the efforts that you'll hear more about from the Chalkboard Project with its class districts, which I think are sort of the model for Senate Bill 252. What Oregon has uniquely done is really, you know, involved school district leaders and teachers in that conversation. And so it's really a bubbling up that has really unleashed a lot of innovative thinking and creativity. And I think that makes 252 a really exciting start to start tackling these problems that I've tried to sketch out here in a few minutes. So
great. I'll turn things back over to you. We would take the case that the heart of meaningful reform is teacher effectiveness work, and that is the importance of Senate Bill 252 and 290. Mr. Chairman and committee members, for the record, I have introduced a letter by Dr. Nancy Golden, as you know, as the educational advisor to the governor, and that letter is in strong support of both 252 and 290. I think that's reflective of a growing collective resolve about the importance of this work at this time in Oregon. Senate Bill 252 is a school district collaboration fund. As we've shared with you before, our work has been primarily in four areas. It's in meaningful professional development, new career leadership opportunities for teachers, rigorous performance evaluation, and new compensation models. As Bill talks about reform, I think we know that the current single-step salary schedule was developed in the 1920s. It has not changed. And perhaps it's time that we have a look at some of those compensation structures. There are many messages I want to share with you today, but I think the first most important message is this reform proposal is really about student achievement. We have learned through our class districts, and we've learned through our experiences over the course of the last 3 to 4 years, that there is a profound relationship in increased student achievement based upon the quality of work that we do to sustain and support our teachers. We also believe that this bill sets an example for what a teacher-driven, locally designed reform can look like. We also anticipate cost effectiveness. You know, Bill spoke to you just briefly about that whole issue of retention. Through independent study, we know that we lose about $45 million a year in Oregon based upon our failure to recruit and retain our great young talent. We believe it's time that we turn the tide on that issue. There's a similar model for us that was first delivered in Minnesota, and that's known as the QComp model. That was delivered in 2005. We actually did take some of our design principles from QComp. It is currently in a total of 50 districts in Minnesota and in 54 different charter schools, and they have many, many more districts that are showing interest in that program. I had the opportunity to have a great conversation just about 2 weeks ago. I was at a national delivery sponsored by the Department of Education, and the conversation I had was with a woman. Her name is Louise Sandrin. Now, Louise, symbolically, is a member of both AFT and NEA. She is a prominent union leader. And what she articulated to me and several other teacher leaders in the room was simply this, that it is time for our teaching professionals to lead the work in educational reform. And that truly is what Senate Bill 252 is about. These are the lessons that we've learned from our class districts. Chalkboard is currently working with a total of 14 districts in the class project. We currently reach about 115,000 students. We estimate about 6,000 teachers in the state of Oregon. While we now have federal funds targeted to 7 districts in Oregon, we also need to have sustaining funds for the other 7 who do not have that sustained funding. And that's why we are here. We believe that it's time to have a dedicated state support for this teacher effectiveness work. Now, the second important message that I'd like to share with you today is simply this: demand exceeds supply. Over the course of the last month, I've had conversations with Ashland, Roseburg, Medford, Winston-Dillard, a small district down south, Pendleton, the Reynolds School District in the Portland metropolitan area, and an educational service district. And we are not the ones who are going out and promoting this work. We don't need to market it. I will tell you that demand is being driven by teachers talking to teachers. It's being driven by principals talking to principals. There is a great, great demand for class-like reforms throughout the state of Oregon. I'd like to talk specifically about the administration of funds proposed in Senate Bill 252. It directs the Oregon Department of Education to administer a grant program. Very importantly, each district would be granted funds as long as their proposal and application meets the fund's purpose. The legislation also allows the department to grant waivers to districts that would like to pursue other innovations. There are 3 amendments today that we believe we need to get into the record, and the first is an error of omission. So when we submitted Senate Bill 252, inadvertently, we left off professional development. As I described those 4 design areas for you, you need to know that we take the comprehensive view. Each one of those 4 design components needs to be included in the bill, so we want to make sure that professional development is included. Secondly, we want to point out for the record that every district would have an allocation. The funding mechanism would be similar to the School Improvement Fund, which you're familiar with from a few years ago. And thirdly, I'd like to talk with clarity about the issue of funding and source of funds. You know that in our original draft with Senate Bill 252, we included a mechanism. That mechanism called for 0.75% of the state ESD funding formula to be dedicated to Senate Bill 252. We do note that a portion of ESD funds by design are targeted for professional development and school improvement. And I think it's fair to say that we also agree with a growing number of stakeholders that current ESD levels of delivery are lacking in some areas of efficiency. We know that's different from district to district based upon size and based upon services, but we believe it is time that we have a close look at that. To aid you in your deliberation, I have presented for the record another document. This is a study recently completed by Eco Northwest that asks a simple question: what is the amount of funds that go unused that channel through ESD funding mechanisms each year? And what we've determined is over the course of the last 4 to 5 years, that amount is about $25 to $29 million. We believe that that is significant, and we believe that you need to have that information. Now, with that being said, we also want to candidly acknowledge to the committee, as you do your work over the next few months, we know that the ESD funding question will be contentious. It's very, very complex. And for that reason, as a matter of record today, we are withdrawing our proposal for the ESD funding mechanism. Our hopeful optimism and our commitment is that we will work with leadership and see this bill through ways and means with your discretion, and that we will find a permanent funding solution for this, because we believe this is the heart of meaningful education reform that will touch every child in our state. With that, Mr. Chairman, we would be happy to answer any questions, or go ahead and make way for the next panel, sir.
Thank you both. Committee members are fumbling around here in their folders. We don't have any of those amendments, of course. So,
okay.
Questions or comments? Senator Bonamici.
Senator Gersh.
Dan, good to see you.
Good to see you again, Senator.
And, I wanted you to a little bit give some personal experience of your experience of going through this particular program. I think that might make it more real for us.
Very good.
Because I just think that you may have some unique insights that I'm not sure we would necessarily know without you describing it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Senator. And my personal experience was as a superintendent, we implemented the class program 3 years ago, actually 4 years ago. The first year was in design. I found as a leader, Senator, that number one, I needed to get out of the way. That it was more important to turn the time and the resources and the meaningful dialogue over to my teacher leaders. They stepped up. What we found was, in addition to the profound gains in student achievement, perhaps even as important, if not more important, teacher attitudes and investment and belief in school improvement and voice and decision-making went off the charts. We independently researched that through Portland State University. We used a research instrument by Shirley Horde, who's nationally respected. And I think it's safe to say that that could be characterized as transformation. It was a ground-up delivery that was profound. The second thing that we found, Senator, is that we had absolutely high levels of retention. We were up at 98%. And the third thing that we found was we no longer needed to advertise for positions because people were knocking on our doors. There's an informal word of mouth, a network through young candidates around this state, and they know, they absolutely know where districts will make a commitment to them in professional development, in mentorship, and sustained training. And that is the cachet, and we have come to believe that is a different kind of currency for our young teachers that they desire. So I hope that helps, Senator.
Quick follow-up, I could. And obviously, we're talking about a district that's in my Senate district. And when Dan first introduced this, I was a little reluctant to believe that it would be effective. And I got to tell you, just in the district, overwhelming success. And I want to congratulate you. And obviously, we're disappointed that you left. But obviously, you're going to help statewide. So I really appreciate your work. And I applaud you because I was really, really reluctant to believe you were going to be successful with this. So.
Thank you, Senator, and I appreciate the affirmation, and I'm here in this role because I believe passionately in this
appreciate
work.
It.
Thank you, sir.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation and all the work. And I'm one of the committee members who was here in the last session when we heard a lot about the class project and the work that you've done. But for those who may be new to the issue or listening who don't know the background, I admit that I get pretty nervous when I hear you talking about teacher salaries and student achievement in the same sentence because I really worry about what happens when we start compensating teachers based on test scores of students because all students are different and that I don't want to create a system where we have incentives for teachers to go to places where kids are from higher income families and that sort of thing. So can you explain why this project does not create that type of incentive? I want to make sure the teachers want to go to all schools and help all students and that they won't be compensated based on their kids.
Absolutely. And let me begin with belief. Because that's where we begin in the design process. Belief number one is that we honor the collective bargaining agreement. So this is not a program where you go in and you attempt to change or devalue the current agreements that are in place. The second key design principle is this is from the ground up. It's organic. This is by teachers, for teachers, about their career. So as Senator George asked me a question about my experience in Sherwood, this was not me going in saying we'll have this incentive here, we'll have this additional compensation there. The question for our teachers is, what makes sense? We've been locked into this salary model for the last 90 years. How can it look different? What would you choose to have? How would you dream about this? What makes sense for additional roles and responsibilities? And I think that is the distinction. The fact that it is designed from the ground up causes buy-in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you, Chairman.
Zena Heffer, Morgan Anderson, or is Oregon Business Session, Elizabeth is here, okay, and the committee has a letter of support from Dr. Nancy Golden of the Governor's Office, who is not going to be here. Step forward. Don't be shy.
Not shy, just wrong name.
Okay. Thank you. Don't feel the need to read your written testimony, or mostly just highlight the voices that are speaking to you from your heart.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Howe. I'm representing the Oregon Business Association. We are here in support of Senate Bill 252. I've submitted testimony electronically, so I will summarize briefly. The business climate in Oregon depends on a well-educated workforce, and OBA believes that the Collaboration Fund in Senate Bill 252 will help Oregon's workers of tomorrow excel today. We've been very impressed by the class project results in recent years. For instance, the Tillamook pilot has increased the rate of secondary students meeting or exceeding the state math benchmark by nearly 3 times the state rate and 3.5 times the increase for a group of comparator districts. Currently, 20% of all Oregon students are in a class district, but we believe the state should take action to give every teacher and child this opportunity. It's time for Oregon to become a leader in education innovation, and that is why we're advocating for Senate Bill 252 and urge you to move it along to Ways and Means with the Do Pass recommendation. Thank you.
Great. Chair Haas and members of the committee, thanks for having me this morning. My name is Dina Hellams. I'm a mom of 3 kids in the North Clackamas School District. I'm in my 18th year of teaching at Reynolds Middle School, a high-poverty school in East County, and I'm chair of the North Clackamas Stanford Children Chapter. In all of these roles, I'm eager to support policies that help develop a network of vibrant schools across Oregon that'll help to make it a great place to teach and to learn. Senate Bill 252 is one of those policies, I believe. As a teacher, parent, and volunteer, I've learned a lot about the education landscape in Oregon the last few years. I've had the privilege of attending the Celebrating Student Success Dinner that the Department of Ed highlights about schools that are closing the achievement gap. I was part of the team making recommendations for Oregon's application to Race to the Top, where we unfortunately lost many points on effective teachers and principals. Matter of fact, that was our lowest category. We actually got points, though, for mentors and professional development, and these are two areas where the legislature has taken impressive action in the last couple of years. I've also read the Quality Counts report, and while I know that the report has flaws, I'm disappointed to see that Oregon ranks dead last for teaching profession indicators. Despite all this, I know that the colleagues I work with and my children's teachers are knowledgeable, hardworking, effective educators. And as a teacher, I can tell you we are ready to be treated like professionals. We're ready for quality professional development, meaningful evaluation, thoughtful compensation systems, and real career opportunities. For too long, evaluations have only been used to fire bad teachers. We know that that is not the vast majority of our teachers. We deserve meaningful tools that highlight our strengths and help us to reflect and improve our craft. I'm a good teacher, and I work with great teachers, but at the end of the year, I'd still like a meaningful evaluation system. Currently, Oregon does not have a system to promote and enhance support for educators. This legislation will give teachers across the state the same opportunity as those districts that currently have class. Class Project increases support for educators collaboratively. As others have mentioned before, in order to apply for these planning grants, teachers, administrators, and school board members must agree to work together. And when the work begins, it's educators who are at the table, beginning the process of finding the specific changes to the system that need to be made. The parents and teachers we talk to see this collaborative model as the path forward to put Oregon on top when it comes to education. Senate Bill 252 is locally driven, it's research-based, and improves outcomes for kids. I've had the opportunity to hear the praises of class from teachers and from local association leaders. At a recent Stanford Children's Summit, the parents and teachers who were in a workshop to learn about class were clamoring to figure out how they could bring this to their district as well. I see the Class Project as a bright spot in Oregon education, an effort that's treating educators with the respect, the dignity, and the professionalism that the craft of teaching deserves and needs. Bringing similar opportunities to more districts in Oregon will allow the adults at the table to do what we all want to do, which is to improve the education for all of Oregon's kids. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions or comments? Thank you for coming down.
Okay, thank you.
I want to bring a couple of teachers up. One from Ben, if she's still here. Karen? And
Ron Wilkinson.
I'm sorry, Ron Wilkinson.
Kevin Noring.
No. I want to bring up the okay. teachers. I got Todd Jones and Karen Steyer. Todd?
Sandra, I'm with 290.
Okay. We have you down at 252. Welcome to the Capitol.
Senator Hass, I'm Ron Wilkinson, superintendent in the Pine Schools. This is one of our awesome teachers beside me. As superintendent of Ben's 27 schools, I know the future of student success in our district rests on providing in every classroom the very best teacher possible. To achieve that goal will require recruiting, training, and retaining the most effective teachers that are available. We're one of the class districts, and with the help of Chalkboard, and we're also part of the Teacher Incentive Fund, the TIF grant that Chalkboard applied for, we're one of those seven districts. We're in the process of creating a new teacher career pathways, a new performance evaluation system for teachers and administrators, and planning professional development that will give our educators the tools they need to continuously improve. We're also investigating a new compensation system where advancement will be based on meeting specific performance target milestones and achieving success with students. We're really excited. We're seeing our superstars like Karen step into new roles and help guide the district. It's a team of educators like Karen who are doing this work. Karen's one of our co-facilitators of our class project. And they're the ones that are determining what teaching in Bend the Pine is going to look like in the next 5 years. We know that we need better systems for supporting educators. And the systems that we need to be innovative and need to be designed locally. To be most effective, they must have the involvement from the very initial steps by teachers, by their union reps, administrators, school boards, and others. That's what's happening in our district as our class design team has expanded this year to 60 people, and we had to turn people away because of the interest in this project. Senate Bill 252 provides for the type of incentive grant to local districts to do this important work. I've been a professional educator in Oregon and Washington for the past 39 years. Started as a teacher in McMinnville in 1972. I've had the chance over that time to be involved in a great deal of change and innovation. Without equivocation, I can tell you that the energy and excitement that I've been involved with our teachers and administrators, involved with working on the class project this past 18 months is unlike any other that I've been involved with. We are all ready to move education profession to a different level than it's been for decades. We're all focused on maximizing student achievement and assuring we're doing everything within our power to prepare our students for a highly competitive global society that they'll be entering. And I believe this bill provides the framework to encourage that kind of work and that kind of dialogue throughout the great state of Oregon. So I encourage your support of this bill.
Thank you, Superintendent.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Karen Steiner, 8th grade mathematics teacher in Bend, and second career, my previous career was in aerospace, and I can truly say that the class project is completely transformative for me as a teacher, and to see that we as educators are looking at redesigning our entire district, and as our superintendent just said, that we are looking at professional development in a completely different way, teacher and principal evaluations, compensation, and career pathways is so exciting to teachers. We have obviously, from the ground up, it's been an incredible opportunity to be able to design that in our district. What we are looking at are those incredible ideas that teachers have in the classroom. We have very strong professional learning communities in our schools and that are designed to improve student achievement, and we're seeing results. We have, as an educator, it's an incredible opportunity to see that Oregon is making this investment in our children and our teachers. I spent 2 years in Washington, D.C. as an Einstein Fellow with the Department of Energy and the House of Representatives on the Science and Technology Committee as their teacher voice and influencing policy and education. And for me to come back as a teacher into Ben Lapine and be able to help transform the district is a life-changing moment for me. And many of our teachers feel the same way, that they are able to transform our district. As you can tell, it's not only from the ground up, but it's also from the top leadership that has that vision that's able to help create this change. And I guess all I'd have to say along with that is when Mr. Wilkinson said about the opportunity that teachers have new career pathways, we want to keep great teachers in the classroom. That is the number one key indicator for student success, is that quality teacher in the classroom. We do not want to lose them to administration. We want great administrators. We want great teacher leaders, and we want to have an incredible school district.
Thank you. Thank you. Questions and comments for Ben contingent here today? Appreciate you both coming
Thank
over.
You.
I'm going to go now and call up Tricia Yates and Justin Black at the same time. Justin Black from the OEA, Tricia Yates from the OSBA.
John? Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman Hass and members. For the record, I am Tricia Yates with the Oregon School Boards Association, representing the 1,400 volunteer, locally elected education leaders in our school districts, community colleges, and ESDs. OSBA is very supportive of the CLASS project and of programs like it that promote voluntary collaboration at the local level to look at different ways to evaluate and compensate teachers and administrators, and to put forward ideas to make the career of a teacher or a principal more personally and professionally fulfilling. As you heard, and you'll hear from other folks to testify, our members in Ben Lapine, Forest Grove, Redmond, Sherwood, and Tillamook, and elsewhere attest to the value of this model. And OSBA has testified in support of these local collaborations, and we've written letters of support for the CLASS project's successful bid to receive more than $13 million in federal grant money for the CLASS project. So we're supporters. I heard this morning that there will be amendments to the bill. I haven't had the opportunity to see them yet, but an amendment to remove the current funding mechanism is critical. We believe we cannot divert approximately $40 million from the state school fund to pay for competitive grants at the very time our schools are dealing with budget shortfalls by cutting programs, teachers, and staff. We'd also note that decisions about whether to implement these types of programs should be made at the local level. There's nothing in Oregon law or administrative rule that blocks school districts from initiating these types of approaches using their current school funds, private funds, or foundation grants. And you've heard today about the success stories of districts who've done just that. So, Mr. Chair, I look forward to seeing the amendments that have been mentioned, particularly in the area of funding. Thank you very much.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, my name is Justin Black. I'm from the Oregon Education Association. We represent about 45,000 educators from around the state, from kindergarten through community college. I'll keep my comments short because I think I share a lot of them. Our members, as you've heard today, hunger to be treated like professionals, to be paid like professionals, and to have an opportunity to grow. That is not without question. But at a time when they are facing second grade classrooms with 32 7-year-olds in them, cut days, not knowing if they're going to have a job next year due to budget cuts, seeing successful programs in schools being cut, and school closures happening around the state, there is trepidation in seeing dollars come off the top and go to new programs when the basics are being cut already. And I'll leave it at that.
Questions? The OEA, OSBA? Well, I know you are working with proponents of this bill for some amendments that might bring us all to a place of some common ground, so we're rooting you on in those efforts, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I want to call up Kevin Noreen.
Good Good afternoon, Chair Haas and fellow committee members. Thank you again for your time. I know that it's very valuable, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak to you before you today in support of this bill. Again, I am a Sherwood School Board member of 8 years, and as an 8-year school board member who's seen our district develop and implement systems over those 8 years, I can honestly say that this has been the most exciting, successful, and rewarding work that I've been involved in over the last 8 years. This is the type of work that every school board member should be engaged in. This is the work that helps set a vision for a school district and keeps us focused on our most important goal, student achievement. First is, as a school board member, one of my primary responsibilities is ensuring that all of our students are successful. The student achievement results we have seen in our district and the achievement results that other class districts are seeing as well are what every school board member hopes to see when a new program is introduced into their district. High student achievement results. So I've provided the committee with some data that show that, and so I won't go into that. I think you can read that for yourself. And some of the points have been mentioned. I will put in one point of data on there about Sherwood, the district that I represent. In 2009-2010 school year, the Sherwood students met or exceeded state benchmarks in math and reading at higher rates than the statewide average in every grade tested. Sherwood's meet and exceeds rate were between 6 and 17 percentage points higher than the state average, depending on grade and subject. As you can see from those charts, class districts are, as a whole, outpacing the growth of both of our comparator districts and the state average in the number of students at or above benchmark. As was mentioned earlier also, it's not just student gains that we are seeing. We're seeing changes in teachers' attitudes and perceptions. Our teachers in Sherwood are feeling better supported, more engaged in the district vision, and more apt to display their leadership abilities. In Sherwood, we have worked hard over the last 3 years to fully implement these collaborative initiatives around professional development and are extremely proud of the results that this transformative work has had on student achievement in our district. Thank you very much for the opportunity, and again, we support this bill as well.
Thank you. There is no doubt that Sherwood has made some impressive strides in the last few years. Yes. Questions or comments? Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who didn't get a chance who wanted to speak on Senate Bill 290?
252.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 252. We're going to change the order a little bit here. I know some of you are here for Senate Bill 290. This should give you a little bit of a chance to rehuddle. I want to go to 242 very quickly, and then 567 very quickly, and then we will go to 290. We have to adopt some amendments on Senate Bill 242, or else some people in this building, if they don't see us adopting these amendments, will have a heart attack, and I think I'm one of those people. So let me open up a work session on Senate Bill 242. Colleagues, you have in your file the list of essentially one amendment, the dash fours. There's probably 10 or 12 issues that came up during our hearings on the first week of the February session, and they're all there, and we can go through them one by one, but I think most of you are familiar with what we were trying to accomplish when they came up. None of them are substantial in the sense that they change the overall goal or mission of Senate Bill 242. Nonetheless, they are important, particularly to those parties who were directly affected. Senator Bonamici?
Do you expect me to make a motion, or are you asking
no,
me
if I'm
I have
asking,
a question?
I'm asking if you have a question.
I don't, Mr. Chair.
You're okay.
I had a question, and it was answered
okay.
with the help of the committee administrator. So I'm set. Thanks.
Frank, are you okay?
I'm good to go.
Morris? Senator Shields?
Ready to move the amendment.
Okay. Senator Morris?
Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 242 dated 2/17/11.
Senator George moves that the...
Senator Morris.
Senator Morris, I was thinking get George in here. Senator Morris moves the dash four amendments on Senate Bill 242 be adopted. Is there discussion?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, that it's a lengthy amendment that does several things. I've had a chance just to glance at it because we received it when we got to committee today. I'm happy to support it at this time, but just want to reserve the right to raise questions if I find something later that I didn't notice in my brief review. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further discussion, Senator George? We were tap dancing for a minute for you.
Thank you.
We're adopting the amendment.
Seeing no objection or further discussion, then the dash four amendment is adopted to Senate Bill 242. And there will be discussions with House members and Senate leadership about, of course, this this bill will take when we meet next on this next week. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 242, and I would like to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 567. We have some staff from Senator Edwards' office and from the TSPCA. And Marilyn Gantz is here too.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you all come on up? Sarah, did you want to start and just kind of tell us
I
where
do,
we are?
I do, yes. Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Hoyt. I am the legislative policy aide to State Senator Chris Edwards. The bill in front of you, Senate Bill 567, comes to you from our office on behalf of the Oregon Commission on Autism Spectrum Disorder. The concept within Senate Bill 567 arose out of the recommendations of the Autism Commission regarding licensure for state specialists on autism. The issue was first came to Senator's attention during a 2008 statewide tour on autism, and this was highlighted by the commission as being an issue that needed to be discussed. It is our opinion in our office that Senate Bill 567 is best addressed through continued conversations between both the Oregon Commission on Autism Spectrum Disorder and the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. With that being said, Senator Edwards does support Senate Bill 567 and the Dash 1 amendment that should be in front of you. With that, I'd like to go ahead and turn testimony over to Marilyn Gantz with the Oregon Autism Commission, who can better speak to the merits of the concept.
Thank you, Marilyn. Thanks for being here. And seeing you reminds me that I should maybe recuse or disclose that, and I didn't know this until last night, but my wife would be affected by this as an autism specialist. And I asked her about it. She knew all about this, and it would have been fun to put her in the hot seat today and ask her about it. So, thanks, sir.
Chair Haas, thank you, and members of the committee, thank you for the time to move forward on this issue. As noted, I'm the chair of the Governor's Commission on Autism. We had a directive for a 10-year plan to improve services and enhance services. We have a 13-member commission, and that commission established 8 subcommittees. We have about 100 people who've been working on this report to the governor. And you'll note that we gave you a webpage. We'll provide any information you want about the report. We delivered the report to the governor. I'm here today to just talk about one of those recommendations. And one of the recommendations was for a licensure or endorsement for autism specialists. We know, and as over the course of the last few years, the number of individuals with autism in Oregon and across the country, actually across the world, has risen dramatically. We've also learned in Oregon and across the nation that we have figured out what are the appropriate interventions to provide to assist those students. They're complex. Every student with autism presents in a different way, and there's a very important line in fidelity of delivering the interventions that make a difference on behalf of those kids. That being said, then, we know that we need to provide some consistency in how we provide all teachers in Oregon the tools and the information and the skills to provide those interventions in a variety of settings, from a confined small classroom to general science class. And also in the climate of services in Oregon, we know that we have to find a way to efficiently and consistently deliver that training and coaching that's needed. And what we are recommending then is a license. And the license or endorsement would be very specific to those highly trained autism specialists. Those specialists who have the knowledge base, the experience base, and the skill base to coach and train all personnel working with kids with autism to deliver skill training consistently throughout our state. We have pockets of people who are very skilled at doing that. We have other areas where they may lack those skills, or they're delivering those skills inconsistently. What we've been doing in our commission, in our subcommittees, is designing competencies. Those competencies have come from across the nation, the programs that have determined what are the skills needed, along with programs in Oregon. Those competencies are being vetted with our higher ed programs that are providing teacher training in the area of autism, with our local providers. We're vetting those. Those competencies then would serve as the model for pre-service training and in-service training, and to license these highly skilled people to train and coach. We believe it is the most effective and efficient way to do that. Research has pointed us in that direction. To that end, I want to say that we have been working with Teacher Standards and Practice Commission. This is our second attempt to go through a licensure process, and we've taken a different approach working with the commission. Last week, the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission invited the Autism Commission to come and present, and at that meeting, they committed to work with the commission on developing the most appropriate licensure or endorsement, and we're working on what that would be. So at this point in time, we would ask this committee to continue to encourage us to work together and hold the bill at this point and have us come back in the interim in what we've worked out. We are interested in collaborating, and this is a positive step forward.
We agree, and we would love nothing better than to have this done without a new law. Keith, is this within the realm of possibility?
My name is Keith Mink. I'm the Deputy Director for Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. And as Marilyn said, the Autism Commission had been working with us on their proposal to bring to our commission. Their first notice to our commission of their recommendation was at our last commission meeting, and our commission did commit to working with the commission on their recommendation to see what would be appropriate as far as either endorsement or licensure, and working with the other stakeholders that this would impact, trying to come to some solution.
That would be wonderful. Are there questions or comments, Senator Morris?
We had a very emotional hearing yesterday in our health policy committee on autism spectrum disorders. And the bill was focusing on a requirement that it be included in insurance benefits. And my question is, if we know the number of students, but we don't know the number of instructors or staff or resources available, can you shed some light on how these students are receiving instruction today in a little more detail?
So I think I understand your question, that you want to know how the opportunities for students right now currently?
Well, what we heard yesterday was the impression that we have a crying need. And we have identified the number of students, but we don't know the number of staff that are certified or qualified?
Right.
To provide that instruction?
Well, and I don't know if we can answer that. I can tell you that right now we have approximately, and it's a rough number, 100 to 120. They're licensed. They're not licensed as autism specialists because we don't have that license, but they're licensed and experienced and trained to right now provide services through our regional program. So they train and they provide some direct service to kids in programs right now, but they work out of the regional programs and they have large caseloads, or they work for local districts. They have large caseloads, and so they go in and they look at the student and they provide some intervention. What we know is it's not enough. We also have early intervention, early childhood programs, but we don't have enough intensity to jumpstart these learners. And so they might be in a regular ed program, they could be in a community preschool, they could be receiving their services in a general ed setting, in a special ed setting, with a lot of people with pockets of training delivering the services. What we're trying to do is deliver the consistency. And I believe this would also help in delivering, we haven't talked about the details, but it's possible that licensed specialists then who've proven their skills could help implement the health care or, you know, be a part of that cooperative service.
Chair Haas, Vice Chair Morris, if I may. Currently within the licensure structure of K through 12, it would be initial teachers who hold an initial license with a special ed endorsement that are appropriately licensed currently to provide services.
Mr. Chair, is there one follow-up? My impression of what I learned yesterday in the hearing was that there is a very specialized and successful protocol for helping these children at a very early age with autism disorders. And I'm wondering, is that being utilized today in the public sector in education?
It is. It's not fully actualized everywhere, but it is being used. There's a program through the Department of Ed and Portland State University in partnership with regional programs, and they are training and teaching classroom teachers in early childhood to work intensively with kids with autism, and that mirrors some of the programs that they were talking about yesterday.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, we will put this on hold, and we'll work with Senator Edwards and you all, and move forward. Good luck to you.
All right, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
I close the hearing on Senate Bill 567, and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 290. The Superintendent of Public Instruction, Susan Castile, Paula Raddick, Sue Hilden.
Chair Hash, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Susan Castillo, the Superintendent of Public Instruction for the State of Oregon. Thank you for this opportunity to address you today about Senate Bill 290. I'm here because I am speaking in support of Senate Bill 290 because I do believe that it moves our state in the right direction. We want all of our educators to have meaningful feedback about their practice, and we want all of our students to have access to excellent instruction. I've been engaged in work that is happening at the national level on teaching standards with colleagues from across the country through the Council of Chief State School Officers. And the council has led work on updating core teaching standards that brought people together across the country teachers, administrators, faculty from our teaching institutions, our teaching preparation institutions, researchers, and teachers from across the country have been very involved in developing standards that have been developed on the national level. And this bill is about building on the national work by asking the State Board of Education to adopt such standards and then incorporate multiple measures of student success and ask districts to use the standards as the basis for their local evaluation systems. I do believe that it is absolutely time. We actually are overdue on creating a more common language around our performance standards, and our professional educators deserve this clarity from our state and this direction that better supports their careers. And our communities deserve that level of transparency when it comes to our expectations of our children's educators. I understand that the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission has submitted a letter supporting the bill. The TSPC also sees value in developing clear performance standards of our educators. Executive Director Vicki Chamberlain was very involved with the work that was done on these new national standards. And once this bill passes and the State Board of Education goes through a process of vetting and adopting performance standards, then local districts would have the ability to incorporate these standards into their local evaluation processes. And the local districts could weight the standards differently in their evaluation systems and decide locally the best way to incorporate the standards. The Oregon Department of Education will likely require some additional funding in order to complete this work, and we're working on our fiscal impact, and we'll have it ready for you in time for this bill to have a work session. Hopefully it has a work session. Effective evaluations do require continuous collaboration with teachers, as you heard earlier. That has been one of the secrets to success of the class project, is teacher involvement and collaboration. So we do envision that this sets up a very inclusive process with teachers at the table to help design what happens with the evaluations. We want to create a more helpful, supportive system for our teachers and our administrators with clear objectives and measurements. I think we all know that we need that. So we value the decision-making authority of our local districts on this issue and believe that this bill really does help to support that. I know that there are some amendments in the work and in the works, and my hope is that we can all reach agreement on making sure that we make progress on this legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Superintendent. Any questions?
Thank you, and thank you for testimony and support. I'm wondering, why does it take 18 months to implement at the board level the program when there's been so much work that's already been done that would supposedly, at least in my mind, would give a jump start to this whole process? It just seems like there's no sense of urgency, and I feel a sense of urgency.
Mr. Chair and Senator Morse, I feel the sense of urgency as well, and these standards that we're talking about today that would serve as a guide for what we're talking about have been on fast track at the national level. They're, as we speak, they are being finalized and they're to be released in March. And so once we have those, the work will progress as soon as we can on moving forward on implementing these. But these really bring a new approach to how we look at the teaching profession in terms of how we evaluate, how our teacher preparation institutions prepare our teachers, and how we mentor our teachers. They really do provide a new framework for how we move forward on creating practices that are more focused on the learner and really also are a great complement to helping us be successful in implementing the new Common Core standards, state standards that have been developed by states across the country and have been adopted now by over 40 states. These practices and these standards really help support our efforts to deliver the instruction that will help us be successful in delivering those standards. So, Senator, we're going to work as urgently as we can on this once we have approval by the legislature to move forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. Superintendent Raddick.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Haas and members of the committee. I'm Paula Raddick. I'm superintendent of the Newburgh School District. I'm also the past president of the Oregon Association of School Executives. This particular group represents all 197 school districts in Oregon and all ESDs. Within our Oregon Association of School Executives group, I'd like to reference, for the record, a vision and policy task force letter of support you have in front of you. The Vision and Policy Task Force is a group of superintendents and representatives from Chalkboard, Stanford Children, the Oregon Business Alliance, and Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, as well as Superintendent Castillo, who meet on nearly a weekly basis to talk about our vision for public education in Oregon. We're very, very excited and very pleased to support Senate Bill 290. And I'd just like to read the second paragraph of this letter of support. We believe that every teacher and administrator must be evaluated using a reliable, transparent, standards-driven, and proficiency-based evaluation system. The evaluation system for teachers and administrators must be based upon multiple measures, be proficiency-based, and be aligned with the state teaching standards. On the back of the letter of support, you will see listed for you the 19 superintendents, Superintendent Castillo, and representatives from the other associations that I mentioned. I'd like to reference just briefly my testimony also in support of Senate Bill 290. Chair Haas asked if we could speak with some passion about the bills that were presented before you today.
Yes.
So I'm going to speak with passion about a young girl that I see out of my window in the administration building who walks every day to a neighborhood school adjacent to our building. Her name is Sarah. She's 5. Sarah's mother walks her through the doors of a large brick building. It's the first day of school. 5 kindergarten classrooms are clustered in the east wing of the school, and the principal places Sarah with Mrs. Sheldon in room 103. This placement sets Sarah on a trajectory for graduation in 2023. Or does it? It's June 16th, the last day of school. Sarah boards the bus and heads home for summer break. 176 school days have elapsed. What has Sarah learned? What did Sarah know when she entered kindergarten? Has she progressed? How do we know? How did Sarah's classmates perform? Better than the other 4 kindergarten classes? Worse? The same? Is Sarah ready for first grade? How have Mrs. Sheldon students performed over the years when compared to kindergarten children in other class sections in other schools? Who is ready for first grade and who is not? Effective teaching in Newburgh should not be dramatically different from effective teaching in Portland, Bend, or Astoria. We should not be guessing about the quality of teachers and administrators leaving our teaching preparation institutions. It's time to align our expectations, and it's time to raise the stakes. Senate Bill 290 suggests a change in how we do business. Thank you.
Thank you. Sue Hildick.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Sue Hildick. I'm president of the Chalkboard Project. It's nice to be here, and we really appreciate the spotlight today on teacher effectiveness strategies. It's really refreshing and nice to see your leadership on this issue. Very simply, we want Oregon to be one of the best places to teach in the country. We need it to be one of the best places to teach in the country. And the concepts that you're hearing today are things that we think will advance that cause. This is a very important bill, and we're really pleased with the broad-based support that it has, which you'll hear about today and continue to see. And it really addresses three problems we're trying to fix here. In Oregon, we don't have standards articulating a common core of required teaching knowledge and skills that cut across all grade levels and subject areas. We evaluate teachers, but it's often arbitrary, inconsistent, and not based on a comparable set of parameters from school district to school district. And finally, student progress for a classroom, a school, or a school district is not universally considered when an educator is evaluated. What this bill does is require state-level teaching standards to be adopted, and you heard Mr. Porter say that's happening in lots of states. We're learning how to do that. And then it allows local school districts to determine how they will measure educator achievement of those standards during their performance evaluations. So we think that's a very nice complement. You get the state leadership piece, but you have local customization of how those standards will be used in the performance review process. And both of these come with just one parameter. Student achievement using locally designed multiple measures must be an element of expectation and review. We've been seeing this work unfold now in 14 school districts where we're seeing much stronger performance evaluation processes and lots of creative ways to look at student achievement, not simply a test score, multiple measures that teachers define. And I think as we open up this conversation statewide, you're going to see a lot of innovation on that front. Both the National Education Association and the New Teacher Project have recently issued papers on how to improve teacher evaluations. The key points that they insist upon are included in this bill: input by teachers and administrators, local design opportunities, multiple research-based measures, and time for local implementation. As the bill is drafted, ODE and TSPC will work together. We've put in the record a letter of support from TSPC. The standards will be adopted, and then in 2012, after a stakeholder process, the standards are adopted, and school districts will then embark on how to use them at the local level. They will be implemented at the local level in 2013, so the bill does provide some time for that to happen. The use of the performance standards in evaluation is not designed to be punitive. It's designed to help us all learn. It's all about continuous improvement based on the fact we know the quality of that classroom teacher has the most impact on student achievement. As Mr. Porter said earlier on the other bill, research has shown that the best predictor of a teacher's effectiveness is his or her past success in the classroom. This bill will give Oregon a statewide standard for assessing teacher effectiveness and school districts the means of evaluating to those standards. We think the end result will be higher student achievement, better professional development, and more effective and probably happier teachers. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Comments? Senator Barometri. Thank you both.
All right, now Todd Jones from Westland High School.
Eduardo Angulo.
Again, don't feel the need to read your testimony. We have it.
Absolutely.
You don't need to. You're a teacher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Todd Jones. I'm a teacher at Westland High School. Forgive me, but I want to say hey to my students that are watching right now. You should be in class, you guys. I'd like to offer my support for Senate Bill 290 for two reasons. One is in the area of professional development. Each year I'm asked as a teacher to set goals for how I want to improve. As Mr. Porter said earlier, to be honest with you, it's a disjointed, kind of fractured system. There's no accountability in terms of how I set those goals, why I set them the way I do. I always say to myself, let's see, I'll set an assessment goal this year, I'll set a technology goal, but there's no basis in any foundation of a set of skills that I need to have or be able to do as a teacher. Also, last year I renewed my license, and I needed to certify that I had put in so many PDUs or professional development units as a teacher, but to be honest with you, there was never a question of where did I put in those hours? Why did I put them in where I did? Do they fit with the goals I set? Do those goals make sense? And that doesn't seem to me like a system that's going to help build better teaching in the state. The reason I'm enthused about performance standards is I think if we have those in place, I have something in which I can base my goals as a teacher, and then I have something to guide my professional development efforts, and I can actually have a purpose and a reason to doing the work that I do. The second reason I'm supportive of Senate Bill 290 It's a potential for evaluating effective teachers. On the back of my testimony, if you have it there, it shows the salary schedule for my district. It's no surprise to any of us how compensation is decided, but I just thought it would be something to actually look at it. Pure and simple, it's how long I'm there and what level of education I have. Now, I teach my economic students that people respond to incentives. And to be honest with you, as a teacher, other than personal pride and professionalism, I have no economic incentive to do anything in the classroom except show up every day and put in my time. And as the years go by, I make more money. And I'm enthused about the performance standards because I think their potential for giving me an incentive to get better at my craft and help my students learn and achieve, whether those standards are based on my evaluation, whether they're based on attendance, whether they're based on graduation rates. I have an incentive to get better in those areas and do my job even better than I already do. So for those two reasons, it's potential for supporting professional development and for evaluating the effectiveness of teachers, I urge your support for Senate Bill 290. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones, and to the class. I think you did a good job. You could evaluate him.
They will.
Later down worry. There. Of course, nobody's in class right now, probably. You just told him you were good. No. Questions of Mr. Jones?
Clarification, Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris.
Thank you for your testimony and support.
Yes, sir.
Could you explain the BA plus 24, plus 45, plus 60?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, there are two parameters in which my compensation is set. One is how many years I work, which is what I call the y-axis running down the column. And then it's also my level of education, which I'll call my x-axis, the row across the top. So Bachelor of Arts degree, the next column is Bachelor of Arts plus 24 credits.
Okay.
But short of a master's. Bachelor of Arts plus 45, and then you've got Master of Arts or a Bachelor of Arts plus 60, Master of Arts plus 24, and then a Master of Arts plus 45. And those are credits.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. Francillo.
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eduardo Angulo. I'm the chairman of the Salem-Keizer Coalition for Equality. The coalition is made up of seven Latino community organizations that serve our community throughout Oregon. Our member organizations are PECUN, the Oregon Farm Workers Union, CAUSA, the Pro-Immigrant Rights Coalition of Oregon, Mano a Mano Family Center, Latinos Unidos Siempre, our youth organization, Willamette University Meche students, and our coalition's parent organizing project. The Salem-Keizer Coalition for Equality is an affiliate member of the National Council of La Raza, the largest Latino umbrella organization in the United States. We are all in full support of Senate Bill 290, which is being introduced to you today. Ensuring that all teachers are held to high standards, regardless of where or who they teach, is an important step forward closing the achievement gap and opportunity gaps in Oregon. We know that our educators have the most significant impact on students, and yet we do not spend enough time as a state ensuring that all of our students have access to great teachers. As a parent and community leader, I know the difference a teacher can make for struggling children. In my community, I have seen terrific teachers who value students as individuals and take a personal interest in their success. I have also seen teachers who need guidance and support, and since they didn't receive it, so our students suffer and fall behind academically. This bill will send a message to all our communities that Oregon is making excellent teaching a priority and a norm. We will hold all teachers to high standards because we want all our students to meet high standards. Ensuring that all of our students have every opportunity to succeed is not going to be an easy task, but it is a moral obligation. I sincerely hope that the state of Oregon is willing to take action to make our dreams of every student graduating and moving on to successful careers a reality. Here we meet today are the mothers and the fathers of our coalition's Educate and Inspire curriculum. They represent the hopes and dreams of our Latino parents throughout Oregon. This group of dedicated parents have been working for several years helping other Latino parents understand the United States public education system and how to develop effective partnerships with teachers to help their children succeed academically. These mothers and fathers represent the families of over 70,000 English language learners who need effective teachers and programs to help them graduate from high school ready for college. High, consistent standards for teachers will raise the quality of education for all of our students in Oregon, which economically is critical for our state's future. In this competitive global economy, we cannot afford to wait to take action. We must create and maintain a sense, and as you presented very well, a sense of urgency. We need not just to have it for a little bit, but it should be the norm in the state that our state is, that our country is. We're really battling for the future of our nation here. We must do this. We must maintain the sense of urgency to move our public education system forward here in Oregon. Ensuring that high quality teachers are in every classroom is urgently needed now. Thank you.
Thank you, and many thanks to the parents. Okay. Questions, comments? Thank you both. Thank you. Steve Buell.
Chairman Hass and members of the committee, my name is Steve Buell. I'm a 43-year school teacher who just retired, 33 years in Oregon, 10 years in Washington, taught in about every type of school and about every level in the state of Oregon. Excuse me. And I'm here to say that Senate Bill 290 pretty much reinforces what is wrong with Oregon education. Absolutely, you need quality teaching. Absolutely, no question about it. But the high-stakes testing and the reform movement that it reinforces in its language and the way it's put together makes it worse. It's the exact opposite direction of where the state should be going. Now, a couple comments before I explain what I mean here. One, you've heard the term student achievement today. What does that mean? There's nobody, no one's defined it. That means test scores. So that means we're teaching to the test and we're reinforcing teaching to the test. Instead of vibrant, comprehensive curriculums, we're narrowing the curriculum with this type of situation. We're not only narrowing the overall curriculum, but we're narrowing the curriculum in every subject area on top of it. And so, who suffers from that? People not in Lincoln High Schools in Portland or the Lake Oswego's or the South Eugene High Schools. They're doing fine. You're not eating them up with testing. The people you're eating up with testing are the people in the poor parts of Portland and in the poor, economically challenged areas of Oregon. Those are the people that you're saying you're not good enough, really, to give you a vibrant curriculum, one that will move along your good students, one that will find the problems that kids are having and help them with it. The testing doesn't do that, not in our schools. Now, people come forward and suggest that it does. But there's another little thing that people have talking about, let's be research-based. It talks about that in this bill. There's no such thing really as educational research that has any real validity. And for two reasons. One, you can't get control groups. How do you get control groups in with classrooms? There's all, and you can't control the variables. So really the research-based is just something that people bring forward. That's how it really works in the schools. And the importance is to understand how this stuff, what this stuff does is take up time and energy that you should be putting into teaching in the classroom and that you should be putting into fixing the problems within your individual school. This stops you from doing that. I spent 10 years, Washington's very similar to a certain degree, even though their education system's much better than Oregon's. But in the school where I was, we spent all the time getting things that came down from the top, about 50 different initiatives, and maybe one of them was helpful. That's how this is administered throughout the system. And so when you talk about we're going to now begin to use the test scores and to use the achievement, what's that mean for a teacher? That means we're going to, if you're in a poor school where the kids struggle, that means you're going to focus on that. You're going to focus on the test scores. And the test scores are only a small amount of how what a school should be teaching. There is an amount. But they're only a small swath of the whole curriculum that should be taught in the schools if we want those kids to go out and be able to take part in the world. I mean, you've seen kids. How has the reform movement been doing in Oregon lately? The opening person that talked today said, we're in serious trouble. We're doing terrible. Oregon's really got really a bad education system, but we've been pounding the reform system now for 20 years, really. Katz Paulson began it, right? And we've been pounding it for 20 years. And so we're going to now use it even more so to begin to evaluate our teachers. So those teachers will now focus on their evaluations and making sure they have all their little things that they're supposed to be teaching, not on their classrooms. See, it doesn't really make sense. Instead, we need to back off of this stuff. We need to do the two most probably admired educational systems in the world today, South Korea and Finland. And they're obviously very disciplined societies compared to the United States, and it's a whole different ballgame. But two things that they really try to do, both of them. And no one will mention this. One of the things they do is that they try to make sure that their testing does not in any way affect their curriculum. They don't take the test, see what they're going to do, and then design their curriculum. It's the reverse. In fact, they don't even test across the board until they get to their SAT-like test, and they try to make sure that those don't affect the curriculum. And the second thing they do is they really highly train their teachers. And then you know what they do with them? They don't go in and micromanage them. They turn them loose in those classrooms and let them work together. Things coming not from the top. This is all from the top. All from the top. But not from the top, but what needs to take place in their individual schools and their individual classrooms and what they need to go. And since they're highly trained professionals, they're able to make those decisions that deal with their kids. That's the direction we should be going, not the one that this puts us in. This is just more of the same thing. And it's just kind of the way education goes in Oregon today. You can see all the great, even the teachers come up here. Now, I don't have any problem with that. And with the class stuff, I'm sure it's excellent. But what about the stuff that has to do with these people's children in their classroom and getting them a good teacher and having them focus on the classroom? That's what we should be doing. That's what they're doing across places that are really successful. See, because in the well-to-do communities, no big deal. You don't have to do this. So in comes, look at the organizations that came forward. Where are they from? Are they from? And these people are saying, yeah, give us what we... This doesn't give them what they need. I'm sorry. Be nice if it did. This says, we're going to teach more to the test even for your kids, instead of getting them as they can be citizens that take place in this complex world and be well-educated citizens, which is not what we're doing in Oregon right now. All you do is talk to those 23-year-olds in the middle of the spectrum and see what they know. Not much. You have a nice day. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Any questions?
Questions or comments, Senator Dork?
I guess at some level I don't disagree with what you're saying. I mean, I don't want people teaching this class to the test. I don't want people teaching to the test.
Happens
I don't necessarily disagree with what your premise is. But the reality of education is that for people who are on school boards and people in administration have a very, very difficult time removing lower producing or lower achieving teachers out of the classroom through because of collective bargaining contracts. And so the handcuffs that we're in is that we're bound by collective bargaining contracts. If I was at Intel or some other business, somebody wasn't performing to a certain level, you could get rid of them. They're gone. We can't do that in the public school system. I mean, otherwise we'd have people camping out at the state capitol for 2 days like they have in Wisconsin. The fact is that we're in this boundaries, we're in this confinement, and we're incredibly frustrated because on one hand, we've got collective bargaining and we need to protect the teachers, and what ends up happening is you protect all teachers, whether they're good, great, or not so good. And on the other hand, we've got parents who are demanding from us that we come up with some kind of standard so that good teachers are rewarded. And so we're squeezed. And I guess what I'm saying to you is I would love to do what you say, which is, hey, let the great teachers teach, because when we all have good teachers, we all know what that means. The problem is that I have 80% great teachers, and I have 20% that aren't so great, and unfortunately, our entire system protects the 20% that aren't great. So I'm trying to figure out a way that we can kind of say, how do we make the 80% that are great become the norm? And they're 100% of the greats, and everybody's great. And I don't know exactly how to do it without some kind of, as long as you have the constraints of collective bargaining, I don't know how you push that. And so I don't necessarily disagree with you. I just think I'm stuck between a rock and a hard spot here. And I don't know exactly which way to go, and I appreciate your comments, but I'm not sure people necessarily disagree with you.
Well, two things. One, I have a system for dealing with that, but the problem is not necessarily that you've got educated, fully educated people teaching in your public schools. They've all been to college, master's degrees, but all the years I taught, and I'm pretty wide open about this, I dislike bad teachers as much as you do, probably more, because I had to teach with them and mess with them and have them in the class before, the class after. There are not very many that are really bad. In the last 20 years, two schools that I was in, there were a couple that really needed to be out of there. The rest of them, one of the main problems is that we've restricted their ability to teach well in the school. And instead of focusing on setting up a system within which they can teach well, we keep wanting to point at the teacher and say, if we just get this to them or this to them, we'll fix that. That's just not true. What is true is that the system that we've set up, the demand for teaching to the test, the fact that we won't deal with the disciplinary problems often in schools in any reasonable way, the fact that we've moved away from holding children accountable for their schoolwork as opposed to saying, well, it must be the teacher is the problem. All those things can be dealt with if you allow a school to deal with that stuff. Right now, we don't allow schools to do it. Those problems could be taken care of. I'd be glad to spend time with you and explain it all to you, how it could work out. I'm not sure you can do anything at your level. I mean, I think you're right, you're stuck. But it's not a huge number of teachers. It's merely the fact that we don't set up a system that allows them to be successful in the school. And I'm not a real radical guy. I've been on the Portland School Board. I've done administrative training. I had a principal certificate. I've never been a principal. And I've taught all sorts of grades and up and forth. But it's just how it works. And it doesn't. You're right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Time is running short. Please be mindful. I have Chuck Bennett, Tricia Yates, and Justin Black signed up.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. You heard earlier from Paula Radish regarding the Oregon Association of School Executives, which is one of our subgroups at COSA, and the work that's been done by our Vision and Policy Task Force on this bill. I just wanted to express our strong support for the bill and to call your attention on the Vision and Policy Task Force letter you received to the bottom couple of paragraphs, which talk about the local control also associated with this. The ability to develop these standards at the local level is something we found very important. As has been mentioned before, I want to just underscore, this is national. If you go back right now to Washington, D.C. If you went back to Washington, D.C. 2 years ago, or I'm sure in the future, one of the most common discussions is around teacher and administrator effectiveness, evaluation, performance. And one of the things that's becoming clearer from going back there is that if we don't begin adopting standards at the Oregon level, the federal government will help us, and they will adopt the standards. And our feeling has been consistently we need to get a hold of the hold of this issue and get ahead of this issue. I've worked for the past several months with my colleagues at Chalkboard and the Oregon Education Association to arrive at the language in Senate Bill 290 that's in front of you today. This bill is not completely there. There's still some work we would like to do with it, but I want you to know that we continue to have a very successful discussion with the outcome, I believe, will be some amendments here in the next week or two that help clarify some issues of concern. But at the bottom of this discussion, the end game of this discussion is that we are going to have standards in Oregon, and we're going to have a date that they go into effect. And the problem we've had over the years with this kind of issue is it gets talked about, but there's no end time for it. And unfortunately, as Senator Morse, you mentioned, I think appropriately, why does it take so long? I think that's the question we always ask ourselves on this legislation. Why does it take so long? I look back, and I can even see my own role. I mean, this does evaluate administrators, so I can see my own role in why this has taken so long. This puts an end to it taking so long. This says we will have these adopted. We will have them in place. And that, to me, is really the crux of the matter. It also puts it in the hands of the Department of Education and TSP. We have been working, just so you know, there is a lot of information that's been developed on this issue. We have been working at COSA with our colleagues at OEA and have developed a substantial amount of information and proposals on standards in this performance evaluation area. This is really ready to go. I think this will go into effect much faster than the legislation has given us in terms of the amount of time it's given. So I just can't recommend this bill to you enough, and I certainly will be back with my colleagues with the needed amendments. But what won't be happening is changing the heart of this bill. We need these standards. We need these evaluation plans and opportunities, and we need to get this done ahead of someone else telling us to do it. So we really encourage you to pass this bill as it's completed.
Question on those dates. Thank you. The dates could be moved up or not, but should they be July 1st? Is that in tune with the school year? Should we stay on July? In Section 4, it says no later than January 1st, 2012, and this would fully implement those July 1st, 2013?
Yeah, we're very comfortable with those dates. That, we think, gives us time for you to pass the bill, the governor to sign the bill and the bill to go into effect, and to get this in front of the Board of Education and TSPC in time to be back here if there are problems. If we find that something's wrong here, we can be in front of this body as you convene in January saying, hey, we need a little bit more tweaking here to get this thing into effect, aimed at getting them into effect for that 2013 school year. So this gives us, it also gives you, I think, a second bite on this. If you find you're not happy with the outcome or you're thrilled and you want to speed it up, but it does give you one more chance to look at this if you decide to.
Thank you.
Sure. Go ahead. Chair House, members of the committee, again, Justin Black from the Oregon Education Association. I would, you know, say I think Mr. Bennett hit it all on the nail on the head. I do want to share one story with you guys. I think a few of you are familiar with the Beaverton evaluation process, the PGE program, professional growth and evaluation. And I would just reiterate again, our members are hungry to be treated as professionals, paid as professionals, and have real professional career paths. I was with some members in Beaverton last week, and we were discussing a number of legislative ideas, and their PGE program came up, and one of them came forward and just said, I have never felt more fulfilled as a professional as I have under this PGE program. Evaluations are good. It helps inform teaching decisions and teaching practices. Our members look forward to this conversation, and I think, as Mr. Bennett put, we're very close.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Justin agreed to be the rose between two thorns today. So, for the record, I'm Tricia Yates with the Oregon School Boards Association, and very briefly, Chair Hassan, members. OSBA's top legislative priority is to advance proposals that support student achievement, and that's why we support Senate Bill 290. We recognize that teacher quality is the most important factor in student achievement, and having state benchmarks to assist school districts in determining teacher and administrator effectiveness is helpful to districts. We particularly appreciate the bill's provision that the performance standards must be able to be customized for each school district. Finally, school board members are eager to provide input to the State Board of Education on these standards, and so we've asked through an amendment that they be included in the parties listed for consultation in Section 4 of the bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the bill.
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Justin. Justin, do you know if the Beaverton evaluation program, the PJA program, would satisfy the requirements of this bill?
Off the top of my head, I do not. I don't know off the top of my head, sorry.
Okay. I'd be curious if I could follow up, Mr. Chair, to figure that out, because I know that they spent a lot of time on it, and I wouldn't want them to have to reinvent the wheel because it didn't comply with this when they're actually doing something that I think meets the goals of this.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, I think what is exciting, there are a number of these kinds of programs going on around the state at various districts that have developed both administrative and teacher evaluation programs, and I think they will become part of the model as we discuss it. So we'll check on these and maybe a couple of others to see if they'll fit the basic parameters. We tried to keep the parameters as general as possible and then leave in that customization at the local level in order to accommodate districts that have been farsighted enough to get ahead of this issue. So we'll take a look at that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. I have Claire Morgan. Elizabeth, did you want to, speaking of taking bites at apples, were you signed? Okay. I didn't know if you signed up twice.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Elizabeth Howe with the Oregon Business Association. Again, I submitted written testimony. I'll quickly summarize that here. OBA supports Senate Bill 290 and the implementation of a rigorous evaluation system for teachers and administrators. Successful private sector businesses have expectations for job performance. To determine whether expectations are met, effective managers do yearly evaluations. With this data, managers help their employees grow and succeed. The process of setting expectations, measuring progress, and finding ways to improve performance works in successful businesses. OBA believes it will work in our schools. We urge you to support Senate Bill 290. Thank you.
Chair Hass and members of committee, my name is Claire Morgan, and I'm a former educator of 37 years at the primary level. During my career, I taught in three districts in the state. Many of you listening to this bill about educator performance standards and evaluation might just be assuming teachers would not like it. After all, someone putting demands on us and then assessing how well we meet them is tiresome, a nuisance, an evasion, right? Wrong. Human nature dictates a need to understand expectations and a basic desire to meet or exceed them and be lauded for doing so. Teachers are no different. And not only do we need to understand expectations and receive feedback for our own benefit, but also for our students. As an educator at different schools throughout our state, I found that implied expectations of teachers absolutely differed from district to district. In order for me to succeed, I needed to know what was expected, how I performed, and where I could get assistance to improve in areas I needed to. Sometimes, on an evaluation, I would receive a comment like, her bulletin boards were in order and attractive, seats were arranged in a traditional manner by rows, or tables were not cluttered. I was not aware that these items were considered part of the expectations for instructing. Luckily, I met the principal's expectation. As an educator, I was never satisfied with just getting by. I wanted to excel, and I wanted my students to soar. Evaluations are only as good as the evaluator, and the professional standards for teachers and principals addresses this and includes evaluations for principals also. Another important piece to understand is that quality teachers who want to improve are not afraid of student achievement being used as part of the indicator. Where my kids were not achieving is where I needed to improve, and I needed to know that. Sharing that information with me would be the key to my success and to theirs. As a retired teacher, I also wanted to tell you why I like the process established within Senate Bill 290. It gives current teachers the ability to have put input both on statewide standards and then again at the local level, implementation. While we all know the anecdote about a camel being a horse designed by a task force, in this instance, an extended conversation to shape the standards by which we will measure teachers in the future is a big selling point. This is simple. Better teachers means better instruction, means better student outcomes. In order to be better, we must know what the standard is, what the measurements are, and where to find improvement resources. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Let's get it going, Mr. Chair.
Let's get it going. Thank you. I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 290 in committee. We will see both 290 and 252 back with amendments in work sessions, and we will have some time for a more freewheeling discussion here amongst ourselves in the open on both of these bills. So look forward to that, Senator Shields.
Mr. Chair, do you anticipate those amendments coming back by Tuesday?
Not on 290.
Probably not that soon. Thank you. We are adjourned.